Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Caldell. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we wait very little these days. We just have to wait between issues, which is a nice change. But once upon a time, we used to wait a long, long time because there was no Doom Patrol comic, and we used to talk about the Doom Patrol in its absence, but now we talk about it between its absences. I think that explains it, doesn't it?
That's our show, folks. Yes, well said, Paul. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can reach us on email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on Facebook at the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com, run by our fellow Doom bro Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yes, thank you. Now, as my esteemed colleague from Brisbane said, I am Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, and you can also contact our Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred, who's at WFDPod. Sorry, Wilfred, sorry. And we are sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, comicosity.com, fantastic site for all the comic book love. They don't worry about the movies or the action figures or the TV shows. They're just all about the comics. And they've got some great articles and reviews, so check them out for lots of good stuff.
Yeah, I don't think there's another comic site like Comicosity. I think it stands unique in its where it's planted its flag and the things it fights for and represents.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, great site, great bunch of people. Yeah. Two thumbs up.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway, how was your week in comics, Mike?
Well, I actually made an attempt on the to read pile.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sound like a murder attempt.
It felt like it with some of them. So I read some Black Science. I love that series from Image Comics by Rick Remender and Matteo Scalera. Love his artwork. So that's it. Do you remember the TV show Sliders?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the one about the little burgers.
No. I never saw that one. About jumping between dimensions.
Oh, yes.
Imagine
the one with Stand By Me Kid in it.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Imagine that premise, but a lot darker and a lot worse.
Yeah, lot I have scary. Actually, I've read the first trade of Black Science, so I did have a sample. It didn't grab me that much, I must admit.
That's fair enough. Each to their own, but oh, I love it. And I think they're on the count. I think they're going to wrap it up at about issue 40. So I'm sure I'm a few issues behind, but I'll get there. Also read a chunk of Future Quest from DC Comics. I love that. Doc Shaner and Ron Randall on art. And written by Jeff Parker. So
friend of the show, Jeff Parker.
Yeah, come back, Jeff.
Is he like an ex-friend of the show? I can't tell.
Yeah, casual acquaintance.
Yeah.
Detective Comics Annual Number 4 from 1991, which was an Armageddon 2001 tie-in, and had Wave Rider clutching Batman's heart and giving a what-if story, which was basically his last battle with Ra's al Ghul.
Ah. So,
yeah, that was a good one. And nice. 4 issues of Paper Girls by Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chiang, another one I'm a big fan of. So I'm slowly getting there. I've still got a crap ton more to get through, but, you know, slow and steady wins a race or something.
Yeah. Some how's metaphor your week? For life.
How's your week been, Paul?
Good, yeah, pretty crazy. Comic-wise, I got into Copra Round 3, so I got into the habit of ordering a Copra book every couple of months, and the new one arrived, and... damn, it's good. Damn, it's I want to do like the pitch where you say it's this meets that, and it's definitely Suicide Squad meets something, but I can never decide what it is because it's like a hard-boiled version of Suicide Squad where the characters seem very familiar and then they go into different directions, and Yeah, but I love it. So there's the characters seem very reminiscent of Suicide Squad characters, but yeah, the plot, volume three, this collection is like six short stories all about the different characters. So it focuses on, it's like a character spotlight for each one.
Mm-hmm.
And damn, they were good and damn, they were different. And yeah, I was thinking, oh, I'll order the next one in a couple of months, but I think I might have to accelerate getting the fourth one. But I think the fourth one is the last trade. So then, oh, do I go to issues? I mean, I'm not an issue guy, but.
No, you're not. No.
Yeah, Michel Fife is a fantastic creator, and he's a friend of the show. I mean, he tweeted about our 100 ep on Facebook the other day. How do you tweet on Facebook?
I was just going to ask you that.
Anyway, yes, but that's the sort of creator he is. He's not bound by the rules. He can he makes his own way. He can tweet on Facebook if he needs to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Only he has that ability.
He does.
But yes, thank you, Michel, for your very kind words, and glad you're still enjoying the show.
Yeah. And get the next trade ready for me.
God, needy.
Yeah. apart from that, nothing much. No. I read a couple of Doom Patrol issues.
Oh, yeah?
Hmm.
Should we talk about them in a bit?
Oh, yeah.
Before like that.
I think could do on the show.
Yeah. Be a bit wacky. Before we get there, though, let's go and have a look at what's going down on Derrington Way.
Sure. So, quite an exciting weekend on Derrington Way. Gerard Way did a fundraiser on Twitch with members of his family and a few members of the Young Animal crew to raise money for, I think it's LA Arts or something like that. It made me feel like a very old man because first they're talking about Twitch. I don't know what Twitch is initially. And then they're, you know, it's some sort of live stream of what they're up to. But one of the things everyone ended up in crow paint. James O'Barr, the crow, you know, the face paint.
I'm glad you clarified that. I was going to ask you what the heck crow paint is.
The crow paint, yeah. yeah, so the character, the crow, Eric Draven. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so everyone sort of donned the white makeup and then the black eye line and then the points coming out up below and above the eyes. And that put me in the mind of the next alternate cover for the Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 8, which is out in 2 weeks, maybe the Doom Clock will confirm that, has an alternate cover by James O'Barr, the creator of The Crow.
Uh-huh.
So I know Gerard is a big fan of The Crow. I think it was one of the seminal works of his youth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's getting to work with one of his favorite creators just on alternate cover. But it's a very, how do you describe it? A very edgy looking cover of Lotion the Cat, looking quite mischievous.
Yes. He's got a bit of a grin on his face. Yeah.
So you can find that on our Twitter feed if Wilfred retweeted it the other day. Or you can wait till the issue's out in a couple of weeks and you can say, okay, I want the Nick Derrington Lotion the Cat in the Alley or just the close-up of Lotion the Cat by James O'Barr. So up to you, entirely up to you. If you can't decide, ask a friend. if they don't know, get some votes in, do some Twitter poll. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. However you're going to make this decision, just do it. Just buy the issue.
Buy both covers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Do we want to mention the postcard push?
Let's.
Okay. So, some of you may have seen the Waiting for Doom postcards around. So, some people have been sent them, some have been given them. Darren and Ruth Sutherland in the Americas have some, and they have been giving them out, I believe. But if you would like one for yourself, and you're going, how do I get one? And they have a very cool design on the cover of, it's the Doom Patrol, Volume 6 version of the Doom Patrol, and it's drawn by my daughter, which sounds really sycophantic, and it is. It's not... but she did a great job, and Mike actually commissioned these for a piece of art that he has, but they were so good that we've put them on a postcard. So if you'd like one, am I explaining this well? I don't know.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, if you'd like one, could you leave us an iTunes review?
Please.
That, That's all you got to do. Just say, I left you an iTunes review. We have a little thing that notifies us via email when we get an iTunes review. And then contact us. And if you send us your address, you will get one of these fetching postcards. And I think I'm going to announce that these will become a series of postcards because I have the best idea ever for the second postcard. Ooh.
So they're going to be extremely limited edition.
Well, when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
And then, but there'll be a new one out. So, and we'll have to work out how people get the new one. So, anyway. Mm. But the new one won't be out for a while because I have to convince the artist that she wants to do it for me.
Right.
But, the next one will knock people's socks off. I think cool. It's fair to say. Yeah. Awesome. Anyway. Is that the sound of any sort of ticking that I can hear?
It sure is. And it's the return of the Doom Clock.
The bloody Doom Clock.
Ah. So, yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out only 3 weeks ago. Issue 7 of Volume 6, which we covered in Episode 101, and saw the team reunite with the Chief, Niles Calder, as he led them into a bizarre adventure into the Scantiverse.
Last episode for those.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you know, some people are a bit behind. I have a friend at work that's just started listening to the show. Hello, Jack, if you're listening.
Hey, Jack.
Yes. And he said to thank us because I can't remember which episode number it was, but it was the one where we said we both used apps to keep track of our comic collection. And then he was like, of course, there'd be an app for me to keep a list of my DVD collection. So, Jack said, thank you. So we helped someone in a way.
Gosh.
And it'll probably be about another year by the time he hears this episode. But anyway.
Oh, is he going back to the start?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He's gone all the way back to number one.
Oh, some of those early apps are rough.
Oh, so some of those too.
Bad audio quality. We didn't know what we were doing. Now. We're so polished now.
we're now a polished turd. Anyway, issue 8 of volume 6 is scheduled for release on August 30th. And Paul, you are correct. It's only 2 weeks away.
Ooh.
So there we go. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for a mere 75 cents on August 18th of 1987, was issue 2 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 by Paul Kupperberg and Steve Lytle. This one was titled Satellite of Doom, and the story featured trouble in paradise as all hell broke out in the secret base of the villain Kalki. And I should mention that its base was on an island in Jamaica. Uh-huh.
Chock full of Kalki goodness, that one.
Oh, Kalkerific. So, yeah, we saw Arani Desai, better known as Celsius, and possibly Niles Calder's wife, and Joshua Clay, better known as Tempest, and a collector of nice sweaters. They'd been taken prisoner after storming Kalki's base, whilst Robot Man fought his way back to our dimension after being zapped into Kalki's chest, and Valentina Vostok, the Negative Woman, discovered the comatose body of Larry Traynor, the Negative Man. Oh, chock full.
Yeah.
We covered the first three issues of Volume 2 way back in Episode 26 from July of 2015, so you can check that out for more details, although I think I've summarized the entire thing pretty well there. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Coming to media players everywhere in 2017 from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Beginning with the origin of his comic book fandom and ending with the destruction of the universe, Professor Zoom Yukinori leads a monthly expedition through his favorite single-issue comic book stories from the Bronze Age of DC Comics. While promising unique celebrity guest perspectives in an ambitious attempt to set this program apart from other comic book review podcasts, thrill to the imagination. Bask in the brilliance. Experience the wonder of... Show me the wonder I have seen the birthplace of the universe. The Done in One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show. Discover how compressed storytelling can broaden one's mind. Listen for it wherever Fire and Water Podcast Network podcasts are networking.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, and this week we are returning to Rachel Pollack's run in Volume 2, and we're going to be covering issues 74 and 75. And Paul, take us into issue 74, please.
Issue 74 of the Doom Patrol, it came out on December 7th, 1993, according to Mike's Amazing World cover Comics. It had a cover date of January 1994. It cost $1.95, so the price is starting to get up there. It was edited by Lou Stathis. It was written by Rachel Pollack, penciled by Linda Medley, inked by Thomas Sutton, lettered by Johnny Workman Jr. Hey, Johnny. And and coloured by Stuart Chaffetz. And I think it has the ugliest cover of any Doom Patrol comic I've ever seen in my life.
That's possibly a little bit harsh, but yeah, it's an odd cover.
Yeah, it's by Bob Fingerman, and it shows a very blocky, blobby-looking Cliff Steele beating up a young man who could possibly be some type of punk in front of an army of robot men.
Yes.
Yes. So let's move on from this cover. Now, I found this synopsis I'm reading today. It comes from the World Wide Web, the WWW, as it's known. And it was written by Tom Hartley. So thanks, Tom. You've saved me a few, a good half hour at least. And it came from the Doom Patrol Online website. Doom Patrol Online, very good. Real focus on Volume 3 and Volume 2, mostly.
I must admit, I've never heard of that site.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, a lot of the branding on it is sort of Jost Enterprises and that sort of thing. So,
okay,
yeah, but they've got probably about 3/4 of Volume 2 synopsized very well in there.
Right.
Anyway, so the story opens with Kate Godwin, also known as Coagula, playing a video game called Robot Man the Game, which is based on Cliff Steele's adventures with the Doom Patrol. The object of the game is to find Crazy Jane, but first Robot Man must defeat a series of monsters, including the Candlemaker. The game is loosely based on the Morrison issues that's round out the end of his Volume 2 run. When the real Cliff Steele learns of this game, he is outraged that someone would try to turn his life into a video game, and he and Kate set out to find the game's creator. They encounter some fans of the game who have a robot with Cliff Steele's personality, but eventually they discover a warehouse in Violet Valley, which is where they live. That is the headquarters of Shure, which is Steele's Universal Robot Emporium. Once inside, they find several dozen robot bodies in various stages of completion and an assortment of robot spare parts laid out on an assembly line. Suddenly, a disembodied voice shouts, "This is Cliff Steele! Get out of my body!" And they are attacked by hoses that spray scalding steam and by animated cables that descend from the ceiling. But these weapons prove to be no match for Kate's ability to coagulate and dissolve matter and Cliff's brute strength. They then meet the proprietor of Shure, a bespectacled bald little man whose name is not revealed in the story, who explains that when Niles Calder downloaded Cliff's consciousness onto a computer disk after the Candlemaker destroyed Cliff's human brain back in issue 58, this nameless little man was somehow able to get a copy of the disk and has now made further copies, which he is selling on the black market. Ooh. Not only was Kate's video game powered by one of these disks, but so is the warehouse in which Shure is headquartered. In other words, the building is sentient and thinks it is Cliff Steele. That's why it attacked Cliff and Kate, because they were invading its body. Cliff and Kate return to the Doom Patrol headquarters and ask Niles if he can use the Doom Patrol's computer to access all the copy disks that Shure had distributed and infect them with a virus. Meanwhile, three children, I think they are, Rick, Alice and Tom, have purchased one of Shure's disks and created their own Robot Man with spare parts from a junkyard. Rick has also created a handheld remote control unit that inputs data directly into the robot's consciousness. He has used this device to convince the robot that he, Rick, is Niles Calder, that Alice is Crazy Jane, and that Tom is Larry Traynor. The robot, of course, thinks that it is Cliff Steele, but Alice tells the robot that it is merely a copy of Steele. The robot steals the remote control unit from Rick, and in order to determine whether or not it really is Cliff Steele or just a copy, it uses the remote control unit to input random data into its consciousness. The random data creates a series of bizarre hallucinations. Eventually, Alice uses the remote to stop the hallucinations, and the robot tries to describe to her what it experienced, but suddenly the lights in the robot's eyes flicker out, and in a dead, toneless voice, it repeats the name, Jane, 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 Jane. Meanwhile, Niles Calder has succeeded in infiltrating all of Shaw's copied discs and infecting them with his virus, and the copies of Cliff Steele everywhere act mindlessly repeating the same name. Jane, 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 Jane. In fact, some of the robot bodies at the Shaw warehouse burst into flames, and these fires are still blazing when Cliff, Kate, and Niles arrive at the warehouse and confront Shaw's proprietor. When the little man asks Cliff why he isn't affected by the virus that has destroyed all of Cliff's copies, Cliff says, they're machines and I'm not. Hmm.
Damn. So,
what'd you think of this one?
I actually wish this story had gone more than one issue. I think it was really interesting. And it would have been cool to see how the disc had been stolen.
Yeah.
And how Shaw got started up. And I also found myself calling the fake robot man that the kids have built, Phobot Man.
Okay. Like it.
Yeah. So I really liked the story. I thought it was really cool, a really interesting idea. It kind of plays on Cliff's typical worries about whether he's more man or machine or what the hell he is. And it was really nice to see him stand up at the end and say, they're machines and I'm not. He's acknowledging he's an actual person, which is a rare moment of clarity for Cliff, I guess, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, it definitely is. I like seeing the video game and seeing the like all these horrific and very emotional adventures just boiled down into a video game where, you know, the candle maker is ripping Cliff apart so you could take a virtual drink if you wanted. And then the candle maker...
You can take like three or four drinks according to that game, yeah.
And the video game version of the candle maker stomps Cliff's head in the end.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, it's one more thing we learn about Coagula, that she likes playing video games. So that's cool. And, she's actually very surprised that Cliff doesn't know about the game and isn't getting royalties, etc. So, and then you've got the parallel story of this other version of Robot Man that thinks it's the real one, that's trying to come to terms with its existence. And the kid Rick, who's acting as Niles, is quite cruel to it and, you know, not treating it very well. And I was half convinced halfway through the story that Rick was going to come to a very bad end, and he didn't really.
What a shame, because, yeah, that kid was a bastard.
Yeah, yeah. But, on this Doom Patrol Online site, Tom, who wrote the synopsis, he points out that the man who runs Shaw really looks like Dr. Savannah from Shazam comics.
Oh.
Captain Marvel. And I can see it. He's got a bit more hair at the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he is an egg-headed man with, mirror glasses.
Hmm. He's also in business attire. I don't think we ever see Savannah or anything other than lab coats.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a good call. Yeah, I can see a bit of that there. Yeah.
But I think the best page in the comic is when you see the alternate Phobot Man having the hallucinations.
And oh, yeah.
There's a snake coiled around him, and he's sort of coming out of someone's head, and there's a great big bat there. And, he's got pins through his hands, and there's fighters shooting at him, and it's a great little page.
Mm, very cool. Yeah,
my favourite one. I mean, I think Linda Medley, I've been getting used to her art in the previous issues, but this one seems very different. It's probably Tom Sutton, the inker, has probably a much heavier ink line than previous inkers.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. It does seem to be a lot darker.
Yeah.
Than previous issues, especially in the opening scenes where Kate's playing the video game. There's lots of shadows and very little lighting, which looks really cool.
Yeah. There was one bit of characterization I was worried about where they tell Chief about the someone with the copies of Robot Man, and he just seems to tackle it very scientifically. Oh yeah, I could probably do that with you know, hacking it to get rid of it. And I was thinking, he would see himself as Robot Man's creator, and surely he would be much more fiery about this.
This is why I think it would have been better as a multiple part story.
Yeah.
Just a one and done. They could have done so much more with it, because yeah, Niles would be furious.
Yeah.
That Niles someone had ready. Taken his technology and his scientific know-how and used it for this bizarre purpose.
Yeah, if there's one thing about Niles, he is, you know, 99% arrogance.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And look, it could have led to, you know, another scientific rival being done wrong by Niles and coming back later on to get revenge.
Yeah. But it's interesting the guy's not named. I mean, it's very hard to bring back a character who doesn't have a name. That's very golden age, is to have a villain who you never name.
True. But yeah, I really enjoyed the issue. I just wish it had gone for even a second part, just to span it out more. We may have. I would have loved to have seen how the disc fell into the other guy's hands. And see some sort of reaction from Niles, other than just, you know, his eyebrows raising. And he's going, oh yeah, I'll take care of it. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I think he would have lost his shit.
Yeah.
In scientific terms. Yeah. But I think you're right, Mike. This is probably my second favourite issue of Rachel Pollack's run so far.
Okay. Cool.
Despite not probably the worst cover.
Have we covered your favourite Rachel Pollack story yet then?
Well, so far I'm reading as we go. So yes, we have. And so far that's the one that introduced Coagula.
Right.
Where Codpiece. Kate joined the team and, yes, Codpiece, the Codpiece issue. Who can forget Codpiece?
Oh, very few.
There was never a who's who for Paige for Codpiece, and that's a crime.
What a shame. Maybe he'll reappear in Volume 6.
Well, that would be amazing.
That would be fantastic.
I would applaud that. I would stand on my chair and fall off and applaud.
Codpiece done by Nick Darrington. Wow, that would be amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Codpiece 2.0.
Yep.
Anyway, now you have an issue too there, don't you?
I do have an issue. And it's issue 75 with a cover date of February 1994, but went on sale January 4th, 1994, we learned, thanks to Maximizing World of Comics. Had a cover price of $1.95 and was edited by Lou Stathis, written by Rachel Pollack. Ted McKeever was a new artist joining the book. Johnny Workman Jr. continued on the letters. Stuart Chevitz was on the colours. And the cover was by Brian Bolland.
What? The Brian Bolland?
The Brian Bolland.
Brian the Killing Joke Bolland?
Yes.
Brian Judge Death Bolland?
Yes. The one and the same.
Wow.
Yes. And I won't go into too much detail about the cover at the moment, because I've got more to say in it later on, but it features Charlie the Living Doll sitting in the corner with a big, weird grin on his face. And let's call it an androgynous figure covered in all sorts of animalistic drawings, sort of floating there in blue light. Looking.
I've got two words.
Yes?
Centipede nipples.
Well, okay, yes, nipples, yes. The figure appears somewhat feminine, but there are no breasts, there are no genitals shown. And also the hips, if you look very closely, are slightly different as well.
Cockroach hips.
We'll get back to the cover later on, but yes, it's a very cool cover by Brian Bolland.
I'm sort of boiling it down in the wrong ways, aren't I?
Dear.
Centipede nipples and cockroach hips.
Yes. Let's not mention the snakes. We'll get there. So, Doom Patrol 75, The Tiresias Wars, Part 1, A Handful of Dust. And the issue opens upon a dirty and graffitied alleyway with a man sitting on the ground dressed in a pink floral dress. This man begins a shamanistic ritual, tossing bones onto the ground and calling upon Tiresias, mother of starlight, mother of desire, to open our eyes, to give life to our tongues with a kiss of their mouth. Bring us to knowledge, bring us to change. Just as this man reveals a small model of a house and declaring that the war has begun, an army general appears and states, "You're wrong. The war never ended." Joining the general is one of the builders, the strange faceless beings introduced in Rachel Pollack's first story arc, Sliding in the Wreckage, which is issues 64 to 66, and we covered in episodes 88 and 93. So the fact that this general and a builder have turned up, that's bad news already.
Mm.
Sure enough, the shaman is killed, and the general pulls a bird from the dead man's ribcage, of course, commenting that the past is dead, the days of the Tiresiae are finished, and that this is the time of the building. The bird turns to dust, the builder demolishes part of the wall to bury the shaman, and they leave. Later, a trio of strange-looking people enter the alley to recover the shaman, who's now somehow been reduced to mere bones. They discuss the breaking of a truce with the builders before departing through a door that opens to a barren wasteland they refer to as the Land of the Dead. And it's here that they scatter the bones of the dead man, and suddenly wailing figures rise from the ground, showing the trio strange visions that confirm that a war has begun. Meanwhile, at DBHQ, Kate Godwin, also known as Coagula, is showing Cliff Steele, aka Robot Man, and George and Marion, the Bandage People, another of Coagula's powers, which is being able to see visions via computers. Although she can't always tell if the visions are prophetic or when they've actually occurred. The current vision shows scantily clad people building something. Cliff wonders if this power might be something they can use in a fight, and as the group departs the room, they miss the rest of the vision, which shows the builders appearing again, and they're attacking the scantily clad people. Mm. This won't end well.
Wow.
Elsewhere, beneath the Pentagon, the general confers with his underlings, ensuring their plans are proceeding well. And with visuals from St. Clair, the patroness of television, and advice from a wizardly-looking chap, we learn that an agent named Contract has signed agreements with the Far Ozone and the depths of the sea, and is now speaking with the Heavenly Choir itself. The general is assured that some construction work is approaching fulfillment, and another underling changes the TV channel, showing bandaged people welding a giant wall together. The general then addresses another bearded man named Onamu for an update on the wider societal configurations, to which Onamu replies, "Anchors of stability form now, in abundance beyond even the early days of the original tower. From birth to old age to final death, lives lived without change or growth. Males and females hold firm to their genders, dreams are imprisoned, the burden of personality dissolved forever." The general's pleasure at this good news is interrupted by a man dressed in a toga, reminding him that some of their lost workers are now hiding among another group that's caused them trouble, the Doom Patrol. Ooh. And the general decides it's time to take care of these issues once and for all, by bringing the president on board. Of course.
Oh.
Back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, Dorothy Spinner, the eight-faced girl, and Charlie, the living doll, are watching her imaginary friend, Jolly Hanger, dance with one of the sexually remanded spirits that haunt the patrol's home, just as the head of the patrol, Niles Calder, wheels himself into the room. The dancers abruptly vanish as Niles implores Dorothy to work with him on getting her powers under control. She reluctantly leaves the room with Niles, apologising to Charlie, who tells her to be careful, before Charlie then has some sort of fit and babbles a bunch of gibberish, when suddenly the androgynous figure we see on the cover of this issue appear. The figure says to Charlie, "It's all right, we will watch out for her. You have stayed loyal to the Tiresiae through all the days of the truce. Now we are returning and will protect your friends." Right.
Oh, okay.
Back at the Pentagon, the president, Bill Clinton, meets with the general and Onamu, who lead him deep down into their secret domain. They lead him past John Dandy, who we saw last in issue 51 and covered in episode 68, and the failed earlier project we know as the Ant Farm, which we last saw in issue 44 and covered in episode 48. Before the three of them arrive at their latest project, the president cries out, "Oh God, what is that?" To which the general replies, "Don't you know, sir? A man of your learning? I would have thought you'd recognize it right away. It's the Tower of Babel." Okay.
Right.
And the issue closes with Dorothy undergoing testing by Niles, with George and Marion watching, as the girl is forced to call forth and dismiss as many of her imaginary friends as possible in 10 minutes. George and Marion stand by to direct other bandaged people to interact with their creations, and in quick succession, we see Paddle the Sky, Heart of Ice, the Vegans, and finally Pretty Miss Dot before Dorothy collapses exhausted. The test is suddenly interrupted by a wall exploding, revealing the General and the Builders, with the General claiming he has executive orders to retrieve property belonging to the Department of Defense, namely George and Marion.
Oh, no!
What? So, yeah. Paul, what did you think of issue 75?
Well, this one has art by Ted McKeever. Are you familiar with Ted McKeever before this? Or?
This run was probably my first exposure to McKeever's art.
Yeah, I've seen him around in a few things like Swamp Thing, I think, and he did an issue or two of Eclipso, the Eclipso, the Darkness Within comic.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, visually it's a change of gear, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ted is someone who gets paid for using lots of black ink, I think.
Right.
That's what he seems to invest in. But and all these people look sort of lumpy and misshapen, you know. It's not standard art. It's a very heavily stylized.
Yes.
And people are forever, their eyes are in shadow all over the place in this comic, aren't they?
Yeah.
And we know it's Bill Clinton because he's got Bill Clinton's hair at the back and he's got a red cap on. But you never see his face properly to go, "Oh, that's Bill Clinton." So,
no.
Yeah. But wow, it's a hearkening back to the Morrison run in a big way, isn't it?
Yeah, which is really cool to see.
Yeah. So I didn't expect this. I didn't expect it to be so tied into what had come before so much. But this general has showed up in the opening arc by Rachel, where the builders attacked the Doom Patrol before they moved to Violet Valley.
Yes,
and met George and Marion. So I always thought George and Marion were just sexually remated spirits who lived in the house and obviously died there. I didn't think they came from anywhere else. So that was news to me.
Yeah, as this story arc goes along, we're going to learn a fair bit more about them.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. There's a lot to unpack in this. let's go back to the cover with the androgynous figure, who's got images of like beetles and worms and insects and two snakes intertwined. And let me tell you a story from Greek mythology about a prophet named Tiresias.
Ooh.
So very similar to Tiresias, just without the first E. Okay, so in Greek mythology, Tiresias was a prophet, apparently blind, because apparently he saw the goddess Athena bathing, and Zeus turned him blind for that crime, apparently.
Stop it or you'll go blind. Yes.
Yeah, literally. But, okay, apparently Tiresias happened upon a pair of copulating snakes, and the snakes attacked him, which, fair call. But Tiresias struck out at them with his staff and actually killed the female snake. And the second that happened, Tiresias was transformed into a woman.
Oh,
and then remained a woman for about 7 years before he somehow stumbled back on the exact same spot, two more copulating snakes, except this time he killed the male snake and was reverted back to a man.
Oh. Okay.
So I'm guessing that's part of the inspiration for the Tiresias with their shifting of genders and their whole shtick about change being good, whereas the Builders are all about rigidity and, you know, they don't want a world with quirk. They want everything sane and normal and all under their control. Whereas Tiresias is kind of like, no, change is good. Change happens.
Mm. And tie that with the general's plan, you know, with the Tower of Babel, which was about building a tower to reach to heaven. It's from the Old Testament. And I believe the people conducting that were struck down by God for their hubris. But in this case, I mean, it's the role of man to reach heaven and replace God, you know. And but the general is also spouting off about, you know, as you said, it's another war on anything that's not standard and, you know, yes, normal and things like that. So, which is a very Grant Morrison theme.
That's right. And that's what the general was all about the first time we saw the Builders. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it looks Charlie is a acolyte of Tiresias, it looks like. Or,
well, it looks like he's been loyal to them for so long, and that duty is going to be rewarded with him looking out for the patrol, I guess. So, yeah. I had to do a bit of digging and a fair bit of reading about all this stuff. The title of the issue alone, A Handful of Dust, that actually also comes from the T.S. Eliot poem, The Wasteland, which actually also refers to Tiresias.
What?
Yeah, I know. Mind blown.
Wow.
And then, Unamu. Apparently, Unamu is the founder of the Sumerian Third Dynasty and is credited with writing the Code of Unamu, the oldest extent of a law code governing society, and he was also well known for ordering the construction of numerous ziggurats.
Ah.
So again, with the building of towers and such.
Wow.
So it's all very... my brain is overloaded.
Do we know anything about the Prince Michael fellow who looks like a Merlin figure? Like he's got the metal skull cap and, you know, fetching.
I didn't get that far because I was too busy drowning in Tiresias knowledge. So.
Wow.
But yeah, getting back to the figure on the cover and the androgynous figure who visits Charlie, with the snakes on their body and the pictures of the worms and the insects, some insects are hermaphroditic, as are worms. And the snakes obviously tie back to the mythology of Tiresias, the prophet, and the image of the bird wings spread across the person's chest. Apparently birds were also used by prophets back in the day as like a, what's the word I'm looking for? A familiar or something.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and snakes are revered in some cultures as well and used in part of shamanistic rituals as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on underneath the pages. And, yeah.
Yeah, and the figure on the cover, you know, it's almost as if all these shapes and things are inside her body, like her body is translucent.
Mm-hmm.
And not just on the surface. It's very striking.
Yes. But that was the other thing I was, when you mentioned cockroach hips, I meant more that one of them is more shaped like a woman's hip and the other is more shaped like a man's hip.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, you sort of have to look at it and take the whole thing in because, yeah, very androgynous, you know, very gender fluid. So it's, what little I know personally of Rachel is that she was into, you know, the tarot and pagan rituals, and she is transgender herself. So it's really interesting to see stuff from her personality being put into the book like this.
Mm. Yeah.
And I know when I first read this many years ago, I was kind of like, what? But I thought, okay, I've got the more difficult issue to look at. I'm going to research the heck out of this thing.
Well, I must admit, I read the issue today in my lunch break, and your synopsis of the issue made a lot more sense than my reading of the issue at that time. Yeah. I was very much like, what's going on? And, you know, if you know Brian Bolland's artwork, he has a beautiful line and he's very precise and he's, you know, his figure work is impeccable. Yes. And, yeah, it's quite a contrast to the black smeared art inside by Ted McKeever. I mean, very I like different. Ted McKeever's art, but it really is, it's whiplash going from the cover to the insides in this case.
I'm sort of on the fence with McKeever's art. I think it's okay, but it doesn't. There's nothing that's really wowed me. It seems to service the story and does a good job, but there's nothing that blows me away about it so far.
Right. So,
and I think the thing we have to remember is that this is the first part of a new story, so hopefully more things will get explained as we go along.
Certainly room for it. Certainly room for explanation.
Yes. So, yeah, I think I've enjoyed it more having dug deeper and gone and looked up more rather than just reading it at face value because, yeah, diving into it, it's there's a lot of head-scratching moments. But
I doff my hat to you, Mike, for doing the diving.
Yeah.
Well dived.
I'm going to need a long nap today.
I did think I saw somewhere online that you got up at 5 a.m. this morning.
I've had a very long day. Oh, my God, so long. Yeah. Just getting back to what you said about the Tower of Babel, and yes, it's the story about God punishing man for his hubris. The thing with that is that God made it so that humans who were united and all spoke one language, he actually scattered them across the earth and made it so that they all spoke different languages, so they couldn't understand each other. I'm kind of wondering if the general and the builders are going to use it for that same purpose, because that would seem to go against what they would want. I would think they would want everyone to be united and under their thumb as one sort of thing. So I'm a bit confused by that.
Well, that was the outcome that God inflicted on them. So, yeah, I mean, the aim of the people building the Tower of Babel was to reach heaven and take over.
Right. I'm with you now.
And okay. Become their own God.
Right. See, we're helping each other. Now I'm understanding that part more.
Right.
So, go team.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a long day.
It's a heavy issue, isn't it?
Yes. Good luck to us all getting through the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like both these issues. I thought they were really good for different reasons. I think 74 was great as a one and done. Could have been a two-parter. and I think 75 is an interesting start to the new story arc.
Yeah, definitely. Good to see where this will go. And I think I think after this, we're in the last dozen issues of Volume 2.
Yeah, getting towards the end.
And I should point out, there's a new tagline that's appeared on the cover here saying, Reconstructing the Deconstructed.
Yes.
Which I think it's just a catchy phrase. I can't really see it.
Well, I think it's for the remainder of the run. There is a tagline on all the issues.
I thought they changed, though. They changed them slightly.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they kind of hint at what's to come within it.
Right.
So, but in that typical vague Doom Patrol way.
Yes. We know that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there was some good doomsplaining.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Let's get to the mailbag. And so, yes, now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And this week, we asked you, dear listeners, what's the most useful thing you have learned from a comic?
Yeah, and we heard from heaps of people on this one. This one really pressed their buttons. So, we heard from Brian Winkler, who's at Winkler Comics on Twitter. I'd never heard from Brian before, but he's the thing he learned was MO stands for method of operation. And then someone else chimed in and said, isn't it modus operandi, which is actually Latin for method of operation. And so both valid. Yes.
Yes.
MO. Yeah, I think I learned that one from comics too, I must admit.
I know I did. Yeah, I can't remember where, but it was like, oh, okay. Right. Yes. We then heard from Redbone Harold Lauder at Harold Lauder 4, who said, Richard Nixon putting a bloody murder knife in a pumpkin is something I never thought I'd see, but I'm happy Sean Phillips showed us that. And apparently that's from Kill or Be Killed from Image Comics, which is also in my to-read pile.
Oh, I've not read that, so I can't comment.
Mm.
But Ed Brubaker, isn't it?
Yeah, Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker. I picked it up because I really enjoyed their, the name of it's going to escape me now, the 1940s Hollywood crime noir thing they did last year. What the hell is it? The Fade Out.
The Fade Out.
Yeah, great series.
Mm. It's good to see them finally working together.
Finally.
We heard from Aaron Long, Juice005, and he said, I learnt how to feel. The feeling was disgust. Of course, Mike offered me an issue of Crossed.
Yep. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, look, we then heard from Joe Crawford at J3K_C, who said, I learned about nanotechnology.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. We heard from Craig101 at Craig R. McD, and he said, I learnt that energy can't be destroyed, only transformed or moved around, according to The Flash.
Okay.
Mm.
Some comic book science there.
Yeah.
We then heard from Comics in the Golden Age, who said that they learnt that with great power comes great responsibility, also lots of Russian and German phrases from reading X-Men, which I presume must be accurate. What was it that Colossus used to say? Boshimoi. Something like that.
It
means goodness me.
Okay.
Or something.
Good.
I'm probably just murdered that anyway.
We heard from Fracknarok, who's at Fractures, our mate Frack. And he said, I learnt that you can be the fifth best in everything and people will still hate you. A bit of a Mento reference there from Frack.
Yeah. Poor old Mento. Mm. Martin Gray chimes in, at Martin Gray, with the term chronosynclastic infidibilum. Right. I probably murdered that as well. From an issue of Superman, but I'm probably spelling it incorrectly. Hey, Martin, at least you didn't go on a podcast and say it incorrectly.
Well, I'm going to have to... Google that. Chrono synclastic infinibulum. This is fantastic podcasting that we
don't even charge you guys a Patreon for this goodness.
This means that a person exists at multiple points and lines in space-time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. We're all learning today.
Dimensional nexus where you're everywhere at once.
Okay.
Wow. Golly.
And how do you pronounce it, Paul?
Martin? Chronosynclastic infidibulum.
Showing off.
Oh, I don't know. We heard from Raymond T. Jarks, who's at Dance for My Horses, and he said, I learned that mixing bleach and ammonia creates a toxic vapor that they used to clear the trenches in World War I, and he learned that from a Punisher War Journal issue, which sounds fairly dangerous in this time, day and age.
Yeah, a little bit, but interesting lesson. Yeah.
Yeah.
We then heard from Clinton, Coffee and Comics, at Coffee and Comics blog,
who Clinton. Said...
I've learned about half a dozen variations on the Green Lantern Oath that apparently work just dandy for whoever says them. Oh, and I also learned the power Hostess Fruit Pies have over supervillains.
The Hostess Fruit Pie ads.
I miss those old ads. That was so cool. Yeah.
We heard from Moby1, at Shmoby1. He said, I learned that there's no point arguing about comic book science. No, there isn't. It just
is. Correct.
We all just need to accept it and move on.
That's right. Cash Flag at Reba02 said, from the letter columns in Wonder Man, I learned real names of all the characters in Gilligan's Island. Pure useless info that I still know.
Wow. I don't know that.
Okay.
I know, well, the professor, the movie star, Marianne, Hal and his wife?
I don't know.
It's been a while. We heard from Wild Dog Podcast at Wild Pod, which is our friend Jay, and he said, I learned of the existence of the Quad Cities in the American heartland, home of Wild Dog. Quad Cities, real place. I didn't know that till I listened to his podcast.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Longbox Review at Longbox Review on Twitter said, I first learned about the bubonic plague from Amazing Spider-Man 187 and about parallel universes from a DC special Blue Ribbon Digest 3.
Wow.
See, and they say comics aren't educational.
No, and they bloody well are. That's what they say. Yeah. We heard from David Raganti, who's OP Wizard Beard. Great Twitter name. And he learnt that squirrels are greater than Doctor Doom.
Yes. This is true because that's how Squirrel Girl has defeated Doctor Doom.
Wow.
With the power of squirrels.
Cool.
Powers of a squirrel and a girl. She eats nuts and kicks butts.
Oh dear.
Anyway, we then heard from Kevin, who is at Ostrakos 1, as we were.
Oh, isn't it Ostrakos 1?
I
thought he said Ostrakos.
How did I just say it?
He said Ostrakos.
Oh god. Let's just call him Ostrakos 1.
We've been saying Ostrakos 1 for bloody ages, and that's what it is.
Confusing us with your own pronunciation, Kevin, who is this week known as Wing Kit Chervil, mate. God, can't speak tonight. Kevin says, I learned that radiation gives one superpowers, but standing next to a microwave isn't enough to give you them in a real life. Yeah. Don't get too close to microwaves for too long.
Yeah, I learned Kevin's bloody tall when I saw a photo of him next to Darren and Ruth. Either they're bloody short, but either way.
No, there Kevin is a tall gent. Yes.
He's what we call a tall bugger. Right. We heard from Costa Vutsinas, who's at MTL Web 3944, and he learned about the Salem Witch Trials and Mob Rules Panic from Marvel Team Up 41 to 45.
Oh, jeez. That's a bit of a dark lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
MB, or at PAEZ64, said that they learnt that there is no gain without sacrifice. That's a good one.
Wow. The Daily Rios, who is Peter J. Rios, he said, I learned what a SWAT sticker represented from this issue of Supergirl 12, building up to the appearance of the villain known as Blackstar. SWAT stickers aren't good.
No. It's a timely response, given what's happening. Yeah.
Yep. Stop being racist, everyone, please.
Yes. LC Comics at LC_comics chimed in with, they learned that good overcomes evil just because that's how it is from almost every comic ever. That's not a bad lesson to learn.
Yeah. Grant Morrison wrote a comic, the Earth 2 comic, where it was literally a rule on Earth 2 that the heroes win.
Right.
But it was also a rule on Earth 3 that the heroes lose. Over on Facebook, we heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said that he learnt that you shouldn't be a slave to continuity. I learnt this as a youngster reading any Roy Thomas scripted comic book. He would go to great lengths just to try to justify a minor printing mistake made in a story from the 1940s. Even as an 8-year-old, I would be like, dude, get a life.
Oh, dear. Mike Prezzato then chimed in, echoing Jared's comment a bit. And Mike says, I was going to say that when I was a kid, I cared about continuity and characters. And as an adult, I care more about sequential storytelling and creators. Okay.
Wow. We heard from Tim McEwen. Oh, he's an Aussie, isn't he? He said he learnt to tuck and roll. I was once running down some stairs, two at a time, that sort of thing. I lost my rhythm on the last flight. The choice was to fall down the stairs or not. I chose the latter. I launched myself out from the stairs, kind of horizontally out. I was a good dozen stairs from the bottom, maybe more. As I hit the bottom, I rolled. I tucked, tumbled, and rolled. Without breaking momentum, I sprang out of the roll and ran right out the door. Still made it to my train on time with no broken bones or even a bruise. Thanks, Captain America Comics. And they also taught me several German words and phrases.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm glad you're still alive, Tim.
Yes, well done. Well done, my
Thanks, Doom Captain Patrol. America.
Yes. We then heard from Astro Wallaby, who I'm going to assume is also Australian, given they're a wallaby. Okay. Astro Wallaby said, I learned that the chunks that look like carrot in your vomit when you don't remember eating carrot are actually stomach lining. From Marvel Boy by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, I've read that. Yes, I think I learned that too from that comic. Hmm.
I did learn that many, many, many years ago, but not from a comic. I can't remember where, TV or something. Anyway.
Wow. We heard from Rob Kelly. Rob Kelly from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Rob's probably not listening because he told me that he listens to the start of our show till we get up to the doomsplaining bit because he's not really that into Doom Patrol comics. So he probably isn't listening to this. Hey, Rob.
So Rob, we can say whatever we want about him.
Rob does a shit ton of podcasts, like way too many. It's ridiculous. He does a Bob Dylan podcast. He does the Film and Water podcast. Mm-hmm. He's involved his partner in that. He's got a new Film and Water. It's called Turn It Off with Tracy, where he watches a horror film with his partner, and they see how far they get before she makes him turn it off. And he does the Fire and Water podcasts, and he's doing Superman Minute. Rob Kelly, crazy man, but we like him. But he said what modus operandi meant. When I was a kid, I needed to know because Batman said it. So, yeah, the MO, the modus operandi, the method of operation. Once again, good to see that coming back.
Yes. David Ace Gutierrez said, same here with modus operandi being what he learnt. But he said it was from a Spider-Man comic. Okay.
Wow. David Ace Gutierrez. I don't know if he listens. He works with Rob on things, and he's a funny bug. Yeah. I've heard him on many podcasts. I don't know if he's here. David, if you're here, hello. Anyway, we heard from Arden Bartlett. I don't know who Arden is, but he said that maybe constructing a suit out of titanium is a bad idea. Do we know what comic the panels he put in?
It's from an Iron Man comic.
Ah,
Iron Man is named in the second lot that Arden provided us with. And it looks like Iron Man's at first being grappled by another iron costume-wearing person. And as they go up in the air with their rocket boots, the other iron costume catches fire because it's made of titanium.
Wow.
And he blows up.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, look, we heard from David A. Gutierrez again. And David says, She-Hulk used the word monotony in an Avengers book. It's the same one that learnt me Maelstrom and Gambit.
Ah.
See, comics are good for learning and stuff.
They are, yeah. Mm. Clinton Robson, he's on Facebook too. He said, Firestorm taught me what electrolytes and an electrolysis are. So, cool. Well, electrolytes are in energy drinks, and electrolysis is when you remove hair, isn't it?
I believe so.
Oh. How did that come up in the book? Anyway.
No idea. Anyway, Paul, what have you learnt from a comic?
Well, it's remarkably simple, and because I didn't really start reading comics till about the age of 18, it's kind of a bit sad, but I learnt how to spell tomorrow from a comic.
Really?
I did. I could never spell tomorrow. I was always, there's a two M's, there's a one R and all that sort of stuff. But then the DC mad scientist villain known as T.O. Morrow set me straight, and I have never, ever had trouble spelling tomorrow since then.
Excellent. I'm very happy for you.
What about you, Mike?
Lots of good examples have been given. I think the thing that resonates with me still to this day
that I've learned from comics is that it's okay to be different. You don't have to be like everyone else. Whether you've got some fantastic superpower or you're just a bit of a loner, if you're different from the rest of the crowd, it's fine.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And more often than not, you will find other like-minded outsiders and people who are different.
And yeah.
Things will be okay.
Yeah. It's funny because as a child, I knew very few people who were into nerdy stuff like me. But as an adult, I literally know hundreds of people like me now, through social media, podcasting, and the like. You know, it's fantastic to find people who have the same interests and everybody's so different about it. Like, we liking comics can be so different for everybody.
That's right. And with a bit of luck, your own tastes will expand because of your interactions with these like-minded folk. I know I've found out about lots of cool books just from chatting with people online and meeting new people. So, yeah. But the thing is, you don't have to be like everyone else. If you've got your own quirk or your own thing you're into, as long as you're happy, that's fine. Yeah. Somehow I learned that from comics.
As long as it's not hurting other people.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got an email from Dr. Ange. I think he was one of the first people to ever send us an email back in the day. And now we have one from him. Yeah. It warmed my heart to get this email. So if anyone else wants to send us an email, that would warm my heart some more. And then my heart would be multiply warmed, as they say.
Help keep Paul alive. Keep his heart warm and functioning normally. Send us a damn email.
Please. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to see a gravestone. Here lies Paul Hicks. He died from a lack of emails to his podcast. No one wants that. Ange said, great review of the latest issue, guys. I must admit that I read the issue late at night, so I missed a lot of the small stuff that you guys pointed out. So thanks for the deep dives. He's talking about issue 7, the Michael Red issue. He said, the Rita Farr stuff is interesting as I try to map out the timeline. So in Shade... Rita is living at an old folks' home. So does that mean she is significantly older than Cliff and Larry? Or is she older but her powers make her still able to be young? The timeline is making my head hurt. As a Rita fan, I hope she isn't aged. Yeah, I wondered about that. It's like Rita may be, Doom Patrol in real time with the 60s.
I think it might be more of a case that something's gone wrong with her powers. And because when we saw that one panel of who had to be her, putting the lipstick on in the mirror and the skin's all sort of melted down and wrinkled.
Drippy.
Drippy skin, yes, as they call it in the medical profession. I think it might be a case of she's her regular age, same sort of age group as the rest of the patrol, but because of her condition and her faltering powers, she's had to live in an aged care facility because that's kind of what she passes as these days.
Right. Okay, that's a good theory.
It happens in real life as well. People of any age, teenagers to the elderly, do get put into care home establishments. So it could be that she needs the extra care to be looked after. Wow. That was my take on what it might be. I don't think she's aged at an accelerated rate. I just think that's the easiest way to deal with how she appears in this day and age, in the new volume.
Yeah, well, last we saw Rita in the comics a lot was in volume 5, and she was sort of resurrected, but her complexion and appearance was very artificial.
Yeah.
And
I can't wait till we get to that, Rita, because that was so cool. And sad at the same time.
It was great to see Rita back as a really main character in the book. So,
Yes.
Ange goes on in his email, not as much as we go on, but he does. Lastly, I can't list everything I've learnt from comics, from vocabulary to literary references to science facts. Just crazy, but I'll list two specific things. I learnt about the horrific paintings of Hieronymus Bosch, and I learnt about the poetry of Arthur Rimbault. I'm pretty sure both of these were new references I learnt from the Milligan Shade the Changing Man comic. Hope all is well. Ange.
Thanks, Ange. Yeah.
Now, my wife is often saying to me, how do you know that? And I usually say, from a comic. So I am not a believer. When people say, you know, don't let your kids read comics, get them to read a real book, I think they can learn a lot from the right comics.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And, you know, you got to get people to read what they want to read so they learn to love reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't give them reports from work and things like that.
Oh, dear.
Hmm. Well, I was feeling fairly tired tonight, Mike, but I think this has been a fun ep, and I've enjoyed it.
Excellent.
So thanks, everyone, for joining us for Waiting for Doom. And next week on the show, we will be going back. Well, we've had quite a detour in Volume 2, but it's time to get back to Volume 3, and we're going to do two more issues of Volume 3, Doom Patrol Volume 3, which is by John Arcudi and Tannen Hewitt. Issues 7 and 8 will be the two that we do. It'll be good to get back to that. And yeah, we cool. do have a new question of the week, and it is, who are your favourite fictional siblings? Favorite fictional siblings. So, you know, brothers and sisters, brothers and brothers, sisters and sisters, people related.
Right.
Under parents, that sort of thing. Sorry, I often feel like, you know, I'm afraid sometimes that someone won't know words that I use.
Right.
Anyway. So that's what's coming out next week. If you want to get in touch with us with your answers or send us a lovely email, we love that. You can get in touch on Twitter at WFDpod, email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or backwards com.gmail, doom for waiting. Waiting for Doom Facebook page, and also Doug's excellent blog, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Doug has been doing a fantastic job putting up posts which support our app, and they give you the visuals of all the crap that we're talking about. Podcasts, mm-hmm. that pictures, it's fairly hard. He is the missing piece for that puzzle, and he does a terrific job. And, yeah, we really appreciate what Doug does. And
yeah, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, check out his site, because he's been doing that site for years, and it's full of Doom Patrol love and appreciation and bits and pieces. And he often pulls out, you know, tidbits from Twitter that we miss and shows them to you in one spot. So yeah. Check it. Yeah, but that's it for this ep. So we'll catch you next time on Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom!
Sorry for the foul language then.
What foul language?
I said bloody.
Oh. The general then addresses another bearded man named Unamu for an update on the wider societal configurations, to which Unamu replies, hang on, something weird's just gone on.
Only now?
No, with my headset, I mean.
Oh,
it just went louder.
Yeah, okay. Non-stop dancing girl parade of weird going on.
Yeah. I'll start that bit again.
Unamu.